Yes, I am your host, Yada. Today we're going to begin with an email. This from a friend that I've come to know for a very, very long time by way of writing initially Tea with Terris and then the Prophet of Doom, and subsequently from Yada Ya, the introduction to God, even questioning Paul. He has read each of the books that I have written, and we have corresponded by email for better part of these last 10 years. He is a surgeon. He writes, I wanted to share this brief article with you that my friend, Dr. Andy Bostom, wrote. Dr. Andy Bostom writes for The American Thinker. I listened to your show the other day when you were speaking about Islam, when you were speaking specifically about Kabar. For those who may not have heard that show, there are very few things about Islam more important to understand than Kabar. When you understand Kabar, you understand Allahu Akbar. You understand who is committing acts of terrorism, and you know why they're doing it. You even come to know what will stop them and why the world cannot accept, tolerate, or even be civilized so long as Islam exists. He said, I tried to call, but I could not wait to get through. Your listeners may find some of this information interesting, albeit repulsive and infuriating. By the way, if you would like to express your opinion during today's show on this or any other subject, our number is 877-300-7645. As you know, despite what goes on every day in the Ummah, he writes, Ummah is the Arabic word in the Quranic religious term for the Islamic community. The purpose of Islam is to dominate and oppress the world, to create a universal Ummah where everyone is a Muslim. If you do not wish to accept Islam, you will be killed. He says, our leadership on both sides of the aisle, which is an important insight that I hope more and more of you begin to grasp, that it makes no difference if you elect a Democrat or a Republican, has their head in their, he uses the medical term, he is after all a doctor, in their rectums when it comes to exposing the unvarnished truth about Islam. Now, to digress a moment, he wrote, I have been reading the Psalm 119 and have also reread Yeshayahu 52 and 53 for inspiration. I am blown away by both of them. Before we get to the article that he sent, so that you know, Psalm 119 is 176 verses long. It has 8 stanzas for each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. It is a ode to the Torah. It is a song that tells us how to observe the Torah. There isn't a single rule in it, not a single law stated therein. There's no reference to anything about obedience in the song. But yet it is the masterpiece, the fundamental presentation of how the most brilliant thinker of all time came to benefit from observing the Torah. It is the heart of the Torah section of the Introduction to God, which for those of you who would like to read it, can go to introtogod.org. It is free. And Yeshayahu, which is Isaiah 52 and 53, speak vividly, along with Psalm 22 and 88, of the fulfillment of the Torah, the sacrifice of the Messiah Yahusha, and specifically what he did for us on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. If those terms are unfamiliar to you, then let me just say this. The prophetic presentation of how Yahweh would himself fulfill the promises of Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits are much more vividly presented. They're more graphically presented. They're more accurately and completely presented. They're much more comprehensively and intelligently, insightfully presented in the prophets and psalms written 700 to 1,000 years before the events occurred than they are in the eyewitness accounts, including Matanyah and Yahochanan, Matthew and John. That is what he is speaking of. Now, on to the article. On May 12, 2011, a U.S. Army Red Team issued an unclassified report which purported to explain the burgeoning rash of murderous attacks which have since escalated even further by Afghan National Army, ANA, members on U.S. and other NATO troops. We have focused on this. I'm going to interrupt this article, as I typically do, with some commentary. We have focused on this in previous shows. Originally, the largest cause of American deaths in Afghanistan was by way of the Taliban. And, of course, friendly fire. That changed to IEDs as they became the dominant form of maiming, mutilating, and murdering Americans in Afghanistan. But over the last 2 years, that has been replaced. The most Americans are now murdered in Afghanistan by American weapons, by soldiers that America is paying a wage to. And it's typically within moments of the time the Afghani army soldier is given a loaded weapon in a training session that he turns it on the soldiers who have offered it to him. So this is the U.S. Army's unclassified report on their opinion as to why this is happening. Although the report is dominated by apologetic cultural relativist drivel, which attempts in vain to explain away the acts of murder committed against U.S. and NATO troops by their ANA, in quotes, allies, it also includes a crudely buried, sub rosa truthful narrative. This later discussion is all that matters and bears full, clear exposure, particularly in the light of the morally dubious excuse for the most recent spat of such killings of U.S. troops. Remember, we just covered that yesterday. As the 2,000th American soldier was killed in Afghanistan, rather than explain that it was Islam that had corrupted the murderer, causing him to kill the American infidel, the U.S. Army instead blamed the U.S. soldier, saying that most of the killings were a result of personality disagreements. Well, specifically, General Allen, who is a despicable human being. He did not write that. I am telling you that. I have read much of what General Allen has written. He is military scum in a uniform. Specifically, the article states, General Allen, in a pronouncement for which he should be forced to resign, so it's like to see that the American thinker and I share a common view of the reprehensible human being in the U.S. military known as General Allen, who is head of our misguided mission in Afghanistan, maintained that, quote, Ramadan fasting combined with operational tempo during the summer heat were the drivers of the most recent killings of his own troops, ignoring the fact that these were Muslim ANA soldiers. Ramadan fasting combined with the tempo during the summer heat. Let's ignore everything except what's important. What General Allen willfully ignores was laid out, albeit clumsily, camouflaged, and using plain language 15 months ago in this Red Team report, based upon extensive interviews U.S. and NATO troops, as the report notes, were both disgusted by and highly and justifiably suspicious of Islamically sanctioned practices and behaviors of their Afghan military allies and Afghan civilians. What you're going to read here, what I'm going to read for you here in this report, is what Islam sanctions, the behavior that Muslims think is good and appropriate. It is reprehensible to American soldiers who have been trained to kill, who think that there is nothing wrong with killing. You know, this is reprehensible to American soldiers. And in the U.S. military, some 80% of women who are in the U.S. military are sexually harassed by the men of the U.S. military. And so this is viewed as reprehensible to those men who have chosen an occupation that demands they kill and that causes them disproportionately to rape. What you're going to hear is the consequence of Islam. It is unattractive. It is eye-opening. Page 3. U.S. soldiers' view of the ANSF, the Afghan National Security Forces, particularly of the ANA, the Afghan National Army. Now, understand, the ANSF and the ANA are both derivatives of America's imagination, funding, and effort. We conceived them both. We fund them. We pay the soldiers. We arm them. We dress them up in fancy uniforms. We give them expensive military vehicles. We squander tens of billions of dollars on them. They are ours. And by the way, all their vehicles say, in the name of Allah. All of the comments regarding the ANSF and ANA by U.S. soldiers, thousands of whom were interviewed for this report, were extremely negative. They reported pervasive illicit drug use among the Afghan National Security Force and ANA. Pervasive illicit drug use. Massive thievery. Personal instability. Dishonesty. Absolutely no integrity. Complete incompetence. Unsafe weapons handling. Corrupt officers. No real non-commissioned officer corps. And there is so much more. And we'll return to why you can't win a war when your ally is a Muslim. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back after a moment. Hello, I am your host, Yada. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. If you wish to call today, 877-300-7645. This morning, we're reviewing excerpts of a U.S. Army document. It was a survey that was conducted of thousands of extensive interviews with U.S. and NATO troops trying to come to understand why there was animosity between the U.S. troops and the ANA, the ANSF, the Afghan National Security Forces, and the Afghan National Army, who America was equipping. Why were they now killing us in greater numbers than even IEDs? In other words, the primary enemy now in Afghanistan is not the Taliban. No. It is the Afghan National Army. And so they sought to understand why that was so. And so after comprehensive survey of U.S. troops in the region, what they reported is pervasive drug use among the Afghan National Security Forces, massive thievery. You see, the Quran's 8th surah says stealing is lawful and good. And when we went into Afghanistan, the drug trade that had been crushed by the Taliban blossomed again under the U.S. intervention. Same thing happened, by the way, in Southeast Asia with our Vietnam War. There's a direct correlation between our government's intervention in various countries and the blossoming of the drug trade and drug production that is highly troubling. Massive thievery, personal instability. In other words, Muslims are stunningly quick to be enraged. They're unstable. You know, one of the things you learn very early on, if you're going to expose and condemn Islam, is that you got to be really careful with Muslims because they have no self-control. They are just instantly enraged, terribly insecure in this regard. They mirror their wannabe God and wannabe prophet. They are dishonest. Well, the Quran says that stealing is lawful and good, so Muhammad told Muslims that they could lie. Allah says that he lies in his Quran, and Muhammad admits that he lies in the Quran and the Hadith, telling his mujahideen to lie as well to make the victims easier prey. We should not be surprised by any of this. All of this is essentially Islamic. They have no integrity. They demonstrate complete incompetence. You know, there's never been a productive Islamic economy. The closest thing ever has been Turkey, and the long story there in terms of the more recent influences of the Mongols as to how they created that, and the fact that they essentially took over a Byzantine culture. And there is some attempt at some degree of prosperity, at least for a while, when the Muslims took over the Persian culture. But apart from that, in their own culture, there has been no productivity, and everything that Islam touches disintegrates. They are just stunningly incompetent. If you want to look at the least competent, least prosperous economies on earth, the least inventive economies, the places where nothing is made that sells on world markets, look to the Islamic countries. Total and complete incompetence. If it wasn't for stealing and the conquest of the treasures of others, Islam would have long since ceased to exist. It goes on to say, unsafe weapons handling, corrupt officers, covert alliances and informal treaties with the insurgents, with high AWOL rates. There is no such thing as an insurgents. That's a term that, since it is used comprehensively and it is errant, speaks also of a conspiracy. But what this is saying is that the very ANA military that America is paying and equipping to fight the Taliban is in fact in alliance with the Taliban. Bad morale, laziness, repulsive hygiene, and the torture of animals, especially dogs. Perceptions of civilians were also negative, stemming from their insurgent sympathies and their cruelty towards women and children. In other words, these people are told to train and work beside the Afghan National Army, and they find them repulsive in every possible way, incompetent and dishonest, unstable, thieves, no redeeming qualities whatsoever. And the very civilians that we are there to supposedly benefit are cruel towards both women and children. They aren't worth American coin and blood. We ought not be there, is the message that we are reading here, and that there is no way to prevail, no matter how long we were to stay. We will continue with this article after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. If you wish to engage in this conversation, 877-300-7645. We're continuing to read excerpts of a comprehensive review of American soldiers and their observations of Afghanistan's security force, their army, and the civilians as a whole. Next, we read the specific elaborations on Afghan Muslim treatment of dogs, of women, and of children. And this is chronicled in pages 44 and 45 of the report. We find that many U.S., and reading directly from the report, many U.S. soldiers were appalled by the rampant torture of dogs and puppies they witnessed while being based with ANSF units. Many ANSF members are prone to inflicting abuse onto dogs they bring into the base for, quote, entertainment purposes. Other ANSF members, while not condoning the torture, failed to see any importance in such behaviors, given the standing of dogs in Islam. You see, Mohammed didn't like dogs because the dogs urinated in his mosque. And so he said that dogs are devils. And so Muslims, unable to think, unable to be civilized, think that therefore it is fun to torture dogs. Now, I know that in Asian communities there are some dogs that are eaten as meat, and most civilization, since dogs have worked alongside of mankind, have benefited and comforted and aided and served with the mankind in so many ways that most people view, you know, dogs as someone that we ought not abuse. In fact, in America, you abuse a dog, that is a serious crime. But you see, the culture is entirely different. And so by the way that they are willing to torture dogs, and particularly since it is so rampant, someone from a Western mentality is going to be repulsed. I'm here to tell you that when I see a dog being victimized, just as I see a child being victimized, I'm repulsed by it. You know, dogs are seen as vermin. No, they're not. This is what the article says. They're not seen as vermin. Their dogs are equated with jinn, which are demons. Now, Muhammad himself was demon possessed, but be that as it may, Muhammad, I am quite confident, had a bad experience with a dog while he was a young child, just as he had many bad experiences with women as a young child, which is why both are treated so horribly. And many ANSF members find it inexplicable that anyone could be concerned about such trivial matters and deeply resent any interference and their torturing of dogs on U.S. Army bases. This animal abuse is a substantial psychological stressor for many U.S. soldiers and has been the cause of many serious social altercations with ANSF members. U.S. soldiers reported that they had observed many cases of child abuse and neglect that infuriated them and alienated them from the civilian populace. They made it very clear that they wanted nothing to do with people who treat children so cruelly. Now, the reason that children are treated cruelly, the reason women are treated cruelly, the reason that dogs are treated cruelly is because Allah is cruel. Muhammad was cruel. So the lone wannabe prophet of Islam was cruel. He tortured people. He raped them. He sold children into slavery. He was cruel. And Allah, in the Quran, although he gets these nicknames, the compassionate one and the merciful one, although those attributes are attributed to him, every depiction of his behavior shows him in hell. Constantly, throughout the Quran, he is depicted never in heaven, but always in hell. And the tortures that he is inflicting on deceased human souls are beyond cruel. They are some of the most reprehensible, repulsive depictions ever committed to paper. U.S. soldiers reported that the cruel treatment of children was universal and repulsive. Although not reported by the U.S. soldiers who participated in the studies, there have been numerous accounts of Canadian troops, especially in Kandahar, complaining about the rampant sexual abuse of children that they have witnessed ANSF personnel committing, including the, it says here, cultural practice of bacha bazi. Now, folks, there have been U.S. reports of bacha bazi, which I will explain here in a moment. Several years ago, I read on another show that I was doing at the time, a comprehensive analysis as to why the Afghani people are almost uniformly opposed to America's intervention in their country, why they want us to leave. And what that report showed is that when America would go into a village and, quote-unquote, liberate that village from the Taliban, that we would bring in the ANA and the ANSF, the Afghans that we were arming and equipping, to now control that village. Now, the moment they came in, they did two things. One is akin to the mafia. They would routinely go to each home and say, we have this insurance policy that we would like you to buy. That insurance policy is, and it's an enormous amount of money for their standards, will keep us from killing your children and burning down your home. And then they inspect the children of that family. And if a boy is attractive to them, he is the subject of bachi bazi. And it happened in virtually every village America liberated from the Taliban. What is bachi bazi? It is the raping and sodomizing of little boys. Gang rape. Gang sodomizing. Taking a little boy out of his home for 2 weeks. And during that 2 weeks, to have that little boy sodomized and raped consistently, continually over that two-week period. That is what the ANA do. That is what America's new military in Afghanistan does. And it isn't an isolated case. It is pervasive. The Quran itself even speaks of homosexuality. There are multiple depictions in the earlier surahs of the Quran where the jihadists, the Muslim mujahideen that go to paradise, get multiple young girls, perpetual virgins that they can consistently conquer. But in one depiction of paradise, it's not young girls, but young boys. And it's not for women, because there is no depiction of women in paradise other than these objects of sexual conquest. The young boys aren't there to greet Islamic women who have served as jihadists. It's very clear that they're there to satiate the carnal desires of male jihadists. And it speaks of them being able to sodomize these young boys. The religion is the problem, friends. And there is no way for us to prevail in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Egypt, so long as we are working with Muslims. Islam trumps anything that we can do to help them. Similarly, U.S. soldiers mentioned the poor treatment and virtual slavery of women in the Afghan society. This is, again, from the article, but it has nothing to do with Afghanistan. Nothing. This is not a cultural issue with Afghanistan. It's Islam. Women are treated worse than dogs in all Islamic countries. In Saudi Arabia, for example, our great ally, say that in quotes, women can't even walk out of the house without their husband or a direct male relative. Their sons have to take them out of the house if they're to go. And they have to wear tents. They're not even allowed to drive cars. They can't work. They can't travel. They have no freedom. When a foreign woman goes to work in Saudi Arabia, she's tortured. She's raped. Her fingernails are pulled out. She's burned by the very women who are treated this way. They treat their servants the way their husbands and fathers treat them. The problem is Islam. It's not Afghanistan. The article goes on to say, and how they found such practices repugnant. They found it unpalatable to befriend other men who had such primitive beliefs. The cultural gulf was way too wide. It's not a cultural gulf, it's a religious gulf. They were repulsed by the abuse and neglect they observed in children and how they are treated. Again, it says in Afghan society. It has nothing to do with Afghan society. It has all to do with an Islamic society. The only reason we know of these repulsive characteristics amongst the people in Afghanistan is because we're there. It's every place. It's pervasive. In the world of Islam, U.S. soldiers largely reported that they did not care for Afghan civilians due to these factors, as well as their suspected sympathies for the insurgents. Boy, that sounds a lot like Vietnam, does it not? the most salient point blatantly ignored throughout the frivolous conduct of our mission in Afghanistan till now, and exemplified glaringly by General Allen's remarks, was inserted as item 40, non sequitur, amongst 58 other comparatively trivial recommendations. Page 50. Better educate U.S. soldiers in the cultural tenets of Islam, as interpreted and practiced in Afghanistan. Ensure that this instruction is not sanitized, politically correct training package, but rather includes an objective and comprehensive assessment of the totalitarian nature of the extreme theology practiced among Afghans. Oh, so sad. You know that the U.S. military prohibits any U.S. personnel reading Prophet of Doom. Prophet of Doom is the most comprehensive, the best documented, the most contextual and chronological presentation of the five oldest Islamic sources, including the Quran. It puts the Quran in chronological order, sets it in the context of Muhammad's life by using the hadith. There is no better, more accurate, comprehensive education that anyone can receive on Islam than is Prophet of Doom, and it is banned by the U.S. military. If somebody in the U.S. military speaks honestly about Islam, they're fired. And yet, here we read, it is totalitarian in nature, and its theology is extreme. We'll return to this in the final segment of Shattering Myths after the break. To the final segment of Shattering This, at least the final news segment of today's program. So here is General Allen telling, writing that U.S. soldiers need to be educated on the central tenets of Islam as interpreted and practiced in Afghanistan. Now, by the way, there is no unique interpretation of Islam in Afghanistan. If that is his point, it is a complete and utter myth. The Islam of the Salafists and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, the Islam of the Wahhabists in Saudi Arabia, the Islam of the mullahs in Tehran, the Islam of the genocidal Muslims in the Sudan who have killed 3 million people, their Islam is all the same. There is but one Islam. This myth that Al-Qaeda and these terrorists like the Taliban have interpreted Islam in an extreme way is rubbish. It is not true. The best Muslims are the terrorists. It is impossible to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. It's not a corruption of the religion. It's not an interpretation of the religion. It is as the religion is. And General Allen, if he were to read Prophet of Doom, if he would shed his ignorance, he would know it. But if he were to read Prophet of Doom and he were to speak honestly about Islam, he'd be fired in a heartbeat. He wouldn't last a second. Consider this. As the Pentagon's only serious and honest, and of course now former, expert on Islamic law, Major Stephen Coughlin observed, if the enemy in the war on terror states that he fights jihad in the furtherance of Islamic causes, that includes the imposition of Sharia law and the reestablishment of the caliphate, which means one dictator over the world, and Islamic law on jihad exists and is available in English, then professionals with war on terrorism responsibility have an affirmative personal professional duty to know how the enemy, that includes all knowledgeable facts associated with the law of jihad. Here's the reality. You don't even need to go to Sharia law, professor. Read the Quran. Read the Hadith. If you want to see them arranged rationally, in chronological order, set into the context of Muhammad's life, read Prophet of Doom. I'll save you, with 50 hours of reading, I'll save you 10,000 hours of studying. If you want to engage in a war against an enemy, you have a moral obligation before sending troops to die and to kill to understand that enemy is what he said. And he's right. And yet, because he said it, he was fired. Just this last week, when a professor in the U.S. Army College also acknowledged the same thing, Obama fired him in an instant. Coughlin, a well-trained lawyer, further argued that such understanding by our military leaders is obligatory if they have to uphold their commission. It is the only professional standard. The Red Team's reports, acknowledgement, no matter how grudgingly, of the essential role of the Islamic totalitarianism in the ANA's murderous actions against the U.S. and NATO troops suggests our military leadership's current dereliction of their duty is even more egregious at present than when Major Coughlin shared his observations back in 2007. It is absolutely true. The U.S. military is universally ignorant of why Muslims want us dead and is instead supplying tens of billions of dollars to Islamic countries around the world in weapons, all of which will be used against us and against Israel. We are aiding and abetting our next enemy. We are engaged in a winless conflict. This is a war because of what Islam has done to these people that we could not win, not in 1,000 years with 100 million soldiers. So long as we tolerate Islam, the war on terrorism will continue forever. The only weapon that can be wielded effectively against Islamic terrorism is the truth. The one thing the U.S. military and the U.S. government will not allow. The truth. Tell the truth about Islam. If you were to expose it and condemn it as it is in its own scriptures, which is done at Prophet of Doom, go and read it. Prophetofdoom.net. It's free. If you were to expose it and condemn it, you can stop it. But if you continue to lie about it and aid and abet it, it will ultimately kill you, destroy your country and family. This is a very serious issue. And because the United States is now making the same mistake in Syria, aiding and abetting these fundamentalist Muslims, there will be a terrible price to pay.
Registered pharmacist Ben Fuchs understands the importance of supplementing with glucosamine and chondroitin for optimal health and vitality. That's why